Blog Talk Radio.
In the old days, you couldn't hook a school because behind every drawn shade was an eye. And before your mother got off the bus into the house, she knew exactly where you had gone, who had gone into the house. Parents don't know that today. I'm talking about these people who cry when their son is standing there in an orange suit. Where were you when he was two? Where were you when he was 12? Where were you when he was 18? And how come you don't know he had a pistol? These are not political criminals. These are people going around stealing Coca-Cola. People getting shot in the back of the head over a piece of pound cake. And then we all run out and we're outraged. Oh, the cop shouldn't have shot him. What the hell was he doing with the pound cake in his hand? Brown versus the Board of Education is no longer the white person's problem. We've got to take the neighborhood back. We've got to go in there. It's right around the corner. It's standing on the corner. It can't speak English. It doesn't want to speak English. I can't even talk the way these people talk. Why you ain't where you is, go wild west. I don't know who these people are. And I blamed the kid until I heard the mother talk. And then I heard the father talk. This is all in the house. Everybody knows it's important to speak English, except these knuckleheads. You can't land a plane with why you ain't where. You can't be a doctor with that kind of crap coming out of your mouth. Why can't you hit the streets? Why can't you clean it out yourself? It's our time now, ladies and gentlemen. It is our time. And I have good news for you. It's not about money. It's about you doing something that ordinarily we do. Get in somebody else's business. It's time for you to not accept this language that these people are speaking, which will take them nowhere. What the hell good is Brown versus the Board of Education if nobody wants it? I mean, this is the future, and all of these people who've lined up and done whatever, they've got to be wondering, what the hell happened? Brown versus the Board of Education. These people who marched and were hit in the face with rocks and punched in the face to get an education. And we got these knuckleheads walking around, don't want to learn English. When you go to the church, look at the stained glass things of Jesus. Look at them. Is Jesus smiling? Not in one picture. So tell your friends, let's try to do something. Let's try and make Jesus smile. Let's start parenting. Thank you. Thank you.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to enter this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a lock.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Hey, folks. This is D-Bird speaking, D-Bird, a.k.a. the Afro-Nerd, and welcome to Afro-Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, the Midweek in Review edition. You just heard the infamous pound cake speech by Dr. William H. Cosby. On occasion, I will reminisce. I will become more and more nostalgic. That took place in 2004. Would you believe? Isn't it hard to believe we're coming up on almost a decade when he made that famous slash infamous speech during the 2004 NAACP gala? Folks, still prescient, still hard-hitting, still necessary. That speech, among other things that I will mention during this evening's broadcast, among other things that led me to the road of being a bit more conservative in my assess. A bit more. Now, this week's RNC makes me want to take some things back. Some things back. Not enough to be a liberal, but some things back. Anyway, before we get into the discourse, folks, again with my partner in white collar crime, the indefatigable Captain Kirk, we've got to groove first. This is Miguel Miggs. Don't Stop. Let's groove a little. We'll be back. Hold on. I couldn't listen to the record. I was listening to the record, but not the actual title. It says Don't Stop. I had to stop, folks. Sorry about that. Again, that was Miguel Miggs. Don't Stop. Don't Stop. Okay, folks. Once again, welcome to Afro-Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afro-Nerd Radio. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. It is our midweek review show. Again, 646-915-9620. And I cannot do it, as I said before, as I tried to say and enunciate. Every once in a while, I will trip over my words. Once again, my apologies. I cannot do the show without the indefatigable, irascible Captain Kirk. Captain, you're needed on the bridge. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Good evening, everybody. Good evening. The captain has arrived. Now, in lieu of the future presidential race, I have an informational diatribe that I want to tell you about at this given time. Now, for some of you, this will be just a refresher course. Most of you know this already. For those of you that don't, it's very good. Listen up. There are three branches of government. You have the executive branch, you have the legislative branch, and you have the judicial branch. Now, let me break down each of them. Now, there was a reason why this was done. This was done to avoid the risk of dictatorship or tyranny. That's why they did this. That's why it was put into. That's why it was set up in this matter. So let's break this down to you. The executive branch, headed by the president. The president carries out federal laws and recommends new ones, directs national defense and foreign policy, and performs ceremonial duties. Powers include directing government, commanding the armed forces, dealing with international powers, acting as chief law enforcement officer, and vetoing laws. The president does not have absolute power, like how Putin has, okay? The president in the United States of America, I repeat, the president in the United States of America does not have absolute power. Let me continue. Legislative branch, headed by Congress, which includes the House of Representatives and the Senate. The main task of these two bodies is to make the laws. Its powers include passing laws, originating spending bills, House impeaching officials, and approving treaties. Now, of course, the judicial branch, headed by the Supreme Court, its powers include interpreting the Constitution, reviewing laws, and deciding cases involving states' rights. Once again, three branches. The president does not have absolute power. What the president actually is in the government is a cheerleader who's jumping up and down saying, do this for me, do this for me. If he cannot get the other people on the same page, nothing will take place. That's why when a Democrat is the president, they want all the other seats to be Democrat and vice versa. It's very simple. But, you see, in later shows, I will expound upon this more and how the bankers actually get around this. But take that information and put it in your head. And it's something that will make you look at the economy a little bit differently. All right? And you need it also not just to be put in your head. It needs to come to the front of your head. The president does not have absolute power. And when things go wrong, the president is made the scapegoat. You lose your job, you say the president is not doing anything for you. Your mortgage goes up, you say the president is not doing anything for you. Just food for thought. Back over to you, Sir Afro-Nerd. Let's get it started.
Very good talk there, Captain. A lot of wisdom, a lot of forthrightness, and I couldn't agree any more than that. And that's what makes it very frustrating, actually, when you look at the RNC. And I say this as I'm at the point, you know, when they say a reformed Catholic or a reluctant Catholic, I might be a reformed conservative. I might be. I can never go back to being a liberal. But there's issues that I have with the Republican Party. I can say that very, very easily. But on occasion, listen, when anyone makes sense, I'm all about the truth. If a Democrat says certain things, Captain, that ring in a truthful manner, I'm not going to get around that because of partisanship. conversely, the same thing would go with being if I heard something on the right side. There's things that folks say from a conservative perspective that is as clear as a mirror, as clear as glass. Same thing goes for those, someone who might be an independent, someone who might be on the right, or I'm sorry, on the left. But there's a bit of dishonesty that I'm detecting on a number of issues with the Republicans that are very troublesome with me. That's why I had a difficult time really getting into the Republican convention that's in Tampa right now. I actually remember the last convention with Sarah Palin, when actually she wasn't that bad. Before we knew how dumb she was, before we knew how dumb she was, and we had McCain up there. McCain has that maverick. He had at least that maverick aesthetic. It wasn't a bad convention. I was actually with it. I was supporting Barack Obama, but at least I could listen to the Republican Party, and I didn't wince. I didn't feel like this is a bunch of smoke and mirrors. I'll get into it in greater detail later on. Okay, folks, welcome to the show. 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. We're just going to beat around a number of topics. I'm not even going to list them. We're just going to just go into it. First up, I want to talk about this controversy. I'm not sure if I'm going to label it a non-controversy yet. Some things are far easier to say, oh, that's just nothing. That's just nothing. This one has me scratching my head. This one has me giving you the quizzical side head nod that you might see your dog give you. That quizzical look like, What? What am I talking about? I'm talking about this Spanish magazine insert. Spanish magazine insert that has your first lady, Michelle Obama, depicted as a 18th century slave, a.k.a. Negress, barely garbed. Actually, she's shrouded in the American flag, but you see her breasts. And I think because, to be simple about this, I believe I spoke to a friend of the show and from the Honor Guard, Mr. Starks, as men, we had said, you know, that photo, that's not even a progress, it's a painting. That painting looks too much like Michelle Obama. It looks too much, she's a young woman, and her being depicted nude, it's not really fantasy, almost. It's a little uncomfortable. It's a little uncomfortable, a little too real for me. So I want to play this news clip. Actually, it's a couple of clips I have around this thing. I've been a frequent caller to the Rob Redding show as of late, Rob Redding on Sirius XM. And he went bananas on this thing, quite comically. He went bananas over how the First Lady has been depicted by the Spanish magazine. We'll give more details in a moment, but I want to play as much as I can, a little bit, without it being, you know, too much. I'll play a little bit of his monologue on this matter. And there's another YouTube clip that's like about a minute. I'll try to get that in as well. So let's listen to Rob Redding really waxing in a very voracious manner about this Spanish misstep, maybe. And I say maybe because once we unpack it, that's why I'm not sure how I feel about it. It's a little bit more to the story. Sometimes, and the captain's good at this, sometimes we react emotionally without doing the due diligence as to what is going on. Sometimes we can be checkmated when the information comes out. A friend of the show, Sergio Mims, also notified me of this thing. I have to be honest, also correct with who gives us this information. So shout out to him for hipping us to this information. And I almost had that immediate reaction like, oh, no, they didn't. But then I said, you know what? I have to do some research, and then I have to rethink it. All right, Rob Redding on the Michelle Obama magazine cover. Hold on, folks.
business. The Empress has no clothes. Have they lost their minds? This is supposed to be, we love you, Michelle. This is supposed to be, we're comparing you to our favorite slave, Negress. We love you, Negress. That's what we, that is what they're telling us. Pee on me and tell me it's raining, and I'm supposed to open up my mouth. Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And how befitting that we had a subject last week talking about the possibility, with all the clips that we've amassed about a race war, that these young men who were GIs, red, white, and bluers, who were in the military, who were telling us that they love this country, that they love it so much that they're trying to kill the commander-in-chief and kill everybody else too. I mean, not only are they trying to kill the president of the United States, they are trying to... I just got another alert, by the way, while I'm sitting here, from another news organization about U.S. troops plotting to kill Obama. Do you understand what I'm saying? Making sure this is on here. I'm talking about the U.S. troops that are supposed to be protecting America, that are supposed to be under, directly under the commander-in-chief. Look, my biggest concern has always been, you want to know what my biggest concern is? I'm going to say it, and I know a lot of people have already thought about this. My biggest concern has always been that the Secret Service would take the president out. That's always been my biggest concern. And I know that I am saying something that is the exact antithesis of what they're supposed to be there to do. But racism knows no bounds. See, these guys were racist. These four, they were racist. And someone caught on to their plot, and they were so damn serious about their plot that they had invested so much time and so much money that they decided that they were going to kill these people. So they killed this man and woman because they stumbled upon their plot to poison apples in Washington, to kill people in Savannah, Georgia, all right, and to kill the president of the United States. Both Michelle Obama and Barack Obama are under pressure. They're under the gun, literally and figuratively. You got Michelle, she's got a large posterior. She's too fat to be on the swimsuit issue of anybody's magazine. If you let them tell it, she is a monkey. She is a slave. She is naked on the cover of a magazine as a slave. And then the president, don't get me started on him, he's a monkey. He's got a bone in his nose. He needs to go back to Africa. Kenya.
All right. I like Rob, but I'm giving him enough shine. You get the point, ladies and gentlemen. You get the point. Now, again, as I said, I saw the photograph. I was disturbed by it as far as an immediate reaction, an immediate emotional reaction in the sense of, this is the First Lady, how dare they? How dare they? And even when Sergio submitted this to my attention, he even had it, you know, this is going to make you angry. And it did. It did initially, but I'm very reticent. And I've learned my lesson on these things. I've gotten mad before in certain matters, and then when you find out that there's more to it, or rather there's more information out there that might put you in a corner and you really can't say anything, this is what I think has happened. Now, I'm wondering – well, first of all, we're dealing in today's time with the 24-hour news cycle. But things just don't last long enough. People are angry for a quick spell, and then we move along. So I don't know if this is going to have enough legs for more information to come out, for it to kind of be put into a certain perspective. And maybe I think too much as well. And I'll talk about that in a moment. I want to hear more from the captain. But then, you know, once we hear what the captain thinks about this, I'm going to provide you with more information as exactly what this is. What this is. Captain, what are your thoughts on this magazine cover, magazine insert cover?
Well, it's always good if you can wait for more information. Caller, we see you. Just hold on one moment. Just hold on one moment. We see you, caller. We'll get you in 1 second after my diatribe, of course. Now, it's always good to wait, but sometimes you can't wait. And the magazine people who publish the magazine, the people who put the pictures on the cover, they want the information via the picture to be inflammatory. They want a response. They want an emotional response, which, of course, will cause you to talk about the magazine, which, in turn, they will make more money. A lot of times, that's just what they're thinking. They say, okay, then there'll be something there where they can cover their behind the picture. That's what they like to do a lot of times. They say, well, this is based on this, this is based on that. In this era, a lot of times it backfires. 50% of the time it backfires. There's another 50% of the time it does not backfire. So ultimately, what they're doing is taking a chance. They don't really care about Obama. They don't care about Mrs. Obama. They care about you, the response they can get from you that's going to generate, that's going to benefit them. That's ultimately what it is at the end of the day. That's all they're doing. That's all they're doing. So that's all I'm going to say about it for right now. Sir Afro-Nerd, back over to you.
All right. And we'll get to the caller. Actually, you know what? I'll open up the lines now, and then we'll just converse. But I'm going to give more information about the photograph. I keep calling the photograph. The actual picture. It's a riff. Obviously, it has First Lady Michelle Obama's head superimposed on the body of this famous painting. The painting dates back to 1800, and it's the painting of an African Guadalupean female slave. So there's a couple of things going on here. This is why we are what we are here at Afro Radio. We're not going to give you like blunt statements, ignorant statements. We're going to really mash this up, analyze it. We leave it up to you to make a determination. I will confess, my first reaction was a little shameful in the sense of, this is our First Lady, what's going on here? But then when you get into the information, you might have to take it down a notch. You might. All right, let's go to the caller, and then we'll also give out more information. All right, caller, welcome to Afro-Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from. Hello? Hello, I think the number's unknown. 111, caller?
All right. Put him back on hold.
All right. All right. As far as information, as I said, this is from a painting dating back to around 1800. And it's of a African Guadalupean female slave. Now, the person or the artist that redid this picture is a Corinne Percheron Daniels. Corinne Percheron Daniel. This artist has a series of famous nudes. Because from what I've been seeing online, Captain, the first thing you hear is, well, you know, some other heads of state aren't going to do this. This isn't happening to them. Why are, you know, this is the first black person of this in this particular position, the first black first lady. What's going on here? This level of disrespect. And I was with them until you find out that this is a larger series of famous nudes that included Queen Elizabeth, Princess Diana, Abraham Lincoln, and the current POTUS, President Barack Obama. And I happen to see, unfortunately, wasn't quite as fetching, I will say, a photograph of Queen Elizabeth in the buff, in the same kind of way. Not as a slave, mind you. Now, that's another thing. Are we uncomfortable? It's a double-edged sword. I would think the discomfort comes with the fact that, geez, it looks, you know, realistic. It looks realistic. She's nude. The article is supposed to be complimentary, but it does talk about her slave ancestry and then coming from slave ancestry to being in the White House. So, but where I get a little analytical, Captain, is where is the shame in actually being a slave? See, we have to be very careful as to how we phrase things. Many of the black bloggers, their first thing is, well, she's being depicted as a slave. Why does she have to be depicted as a slave? Wait a minute. Now, maybe I'm wrong, Captain. Follow me on this. Is it wrong? It is more shame to be a slave owner than to be a slave. Being a slave, there's nothing to be shameful about having been a slave. This is getting into victimization. I'm not about victimization talk. If you're able to overcome slavery, that is something to be proud of. But as far as being a slave, we're not the ones that should be shamed of being a slave. The slave owner, owning another human being, we have to start twisting these arguments around. So because she's depicted as a slave, where is the shame in her being a slave? Being a slave means you are a captured person against your will. So we know that rape victims are often told not to feel shame, even though they do. It is a natural human reaction. But when it comes down to the core of logic, logically, one should not be shameful for having been victimized. If you're going to be shameful, it's if you mire in victimization, which is a lot of as to why I eschew liberal politics. Because you are mired in victimization. So it's not that she's depicted as a slave. She's nude. Where's this coming from? On the surface, I'm a bit peeved, but it's negated on some level, Catherine, because there are other famous people, other notables, other folks, heads of state, that have been depicted this way. So if she's going to be like everybody else, maybe this has to be. I mean, it is what it is. What are your thoughts about that with this extra information?
Well, you definitely have a point, but at the same time, the point, I would say, is not totally valid. It does bring it down some. When you take, you know, Queen Elizabeth and you put her in the buff, and you put Miss Obama in the buff as a slave, whether she comes from the lineage directly from the slaves or not, it's still, we're looking at it from a modern-day perspective. Miss Obama right now is not a slave. Right now she's not a slave. She's the first lady. Okay, so she should be on par with Miss Elizabeth. Okay, she should be on par. But once you start putting those pictures side to side, no, it's not on par. She's a slave. She's definitely below her. You know, so you definitely get a different thing in your mind straight off the top. It's two different things. You're below. You're here. This is a modern-day woman. This is a woman in 2012. You do not want to see any of these black women depicted as slaves in any way, shape, or form. You know, if you put a picture of Obama on the cover, and say, okay, here's her lineage, and you talk about her lineage in the article coming from slaves and everything else, that's one thing. That's something entirely different. That's what it is. That's the historical fact. You can't get around it. But once you start to do this, it's a double-edged sword, and that's exactly what the magazine was trying to do. And then you can back up from it, because then you say, well, this particular artist, this is what they do. And this is what they do in these magazines all the time. They teeter-totter on it, back and forth. And 50% of the time, it backfires on them. And another 50% of the time, it works. It's a game that they're playing. So there you have it, Sir Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I'm in somewhat agreement with you. I guess my only thing is I think at some point African Americans are going to have to. I mean, listen, this is a 300-year. We're talking about 300 years of chattel slavery. It appears that black folks are always put into position of feeling shame for having had a slave status, and I think it would, you know, I think it would be better for us on some level to flip the argument a bit, though. You know, Thomas Jefferson is this great politician, president of the United States, and he had relations with a slave, Sally Hemings. And, you know, no one talks about, well, you know, he owned human beings. It is worse to be a slave owner than to be a slave, as far as the morality scale. It is worse. If someone is raped through no, and they're rape victims too, if you want to get into that, if you want to be even more analytical. They were rape victims also. If you're getting into the modern era and you're talking about women who have been raped, they feel a great deal of shame at having been raped or being a rape victim. But in order to gain strength, you have to put the onus on the person that committed the act, and we are not doing enough of that. We need to be putting it. We need to stop flipping these arguments more and saying, "How dare you enslave, subjugate human beings? Who does that?" That's my only thing. Constantly, the knee jerk thing about, well, she's a slave. That's a little problematic, but I also agree with you. I agree with you that there's the intent there, but the way to extricate yourself from that on some level in the modern era would be to flip these arguments, because you're going to have to. Because this, it could have been a more noble thing. Not with, let's say, it wasn't Michelle Obama, but it was the story of slavery or the depiction of someone else that was, you know, the actual real life. What about the real life person that was the slave that this was modeled on? She is a human being. We don't know what she accomplished. Frederick Douglass was an ex-slave. Now we think of him as beyond that. He overcame being a slave, but he never exactly rejected the slavery thing. You know, you have to acknowledge it, then you move on. But you don't sit there admire in victimization like a rape victim. I think some of how we operate as African Americans has a lot to do with this shame, the shame of slavery, the shame of being subjugated, and then I think we're going to have to move beyond that. We're going to have to put it in a certain context and start putting it on the slave owners. What kind of people own other people? That's what has to be questioned. Okay, folks, we're going to go to another musical break. Again, you're listening to Afro-Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afro-Nerd Radio. I want to go to another jammy jam, always trying to give you good music. The call-in number, don't want to forget that, is 646-915-9620. All right, let's see, what do we have here? Actually, you know what? Do I want to go to the past? I want to go to a song by Stevie Wonder, actually. This is an old song. He sounds an awful lot like Michael Jackson. This is Little Stevie Wonder. This jam is called Sunset. Sunset by Stevie Wonder. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove. classic, folks. A blast from the past. A game that was Stevie Wonder, Sunset. I thought it was interesting with that particular record, Captain, because I thought he sounded a lot like MJ. And that has a lot to do with his youth at that time. You know, before he was Stevie Wonder, he was little Stevie Wonder. So I just thought that, it, you know, when I first heard it, I thought it was Michael Jackson. So I just thought it was interesting cut to play. We go, you know, we play new, classic, you name it. Urban alternative, that's what we do. All right, folks, something else I want to mention anecdotally. I'm going to try my best to try to get this professor. He's a professor emeritus at Queens College, Professor Andrew Hacker. Now, the reason why I mention Andrew Hacker is because many years ago, I purchased a book that I never forgot that he wrote. The book is called Two Nations, Black and White, Separate, Hostile, and Unequal. Let me repeat that for our audience. Again, Two Nations, Black and White, Separate, Hostile, Unequal. Now, Professor Hacker, I recollect that he did quite a few shows. I mean, the book was pretty popular. He did quite a few talk shows. He did the talk show circuit. He's still writing to this day, of course. And I think he has a more recent book. But I'm going to try my best to get him on to discuss this book as well as his more recent book. But this book came to mind after having seen a little bit of the RNC the past couple of days, and to talk about the RNC, and also there's been a lot of notations that there aren't that the representation is poor. You're not seeing too many black and brown folks. A woman from Puerto Rico was booed, or rather, I believe when she was speaking, as a conservative, she was speaking and she was shouted out because of the whole USA thing. So someone was saying, or a group of people at the RNC were saying, you know, USA, USA, chanting USA. And, you know, last time I checked, Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens. So what is the USA thing? What are you implying, actually? Because she's of Latin descent, she's a Latina. She's a Latina in showing up in support of you. And you're shouting her down by saying USA, USA. As if Puerto Rico is not a U.S. Commonwealth. That was problematic for me. There's another story that is gaining more ground, gaining more verification, of a CNN camerawoman. A CNN camerawoman that was pelted with peanuts and referenced referred to as an animal. We feed the animals here, or something. I'm paraphrasing, but we feed our animals here, or something. This is a professional who's there, really, in a unbiased position. She's there only to record history, to film history. She has nothing to do. We wouldn't know her political affiliation. That's not even worthy of that anyway. Whatever she was there for, why ever. It is uncalled for, unconscionable, truly racist to be pelted. And these were members. These were people. They weren't, in all fairness, they were not political figures. But they were there to support this function. Now, they were quickly ousted. They were ousted. But what is this? What is this? So there's some things going on. Matter of fact, now, I don't know if this is true either. I don't know if this is true, so I have to be careful about what I'm saying here. Fox correspondent Juan Williams, who we tout quite a bit, and I need to contact him as well. We tout him quite a bit when we talk about whether it's Dr. Alvin Poussaint, who we've had on the show, whether it's Dr. Bill Cosby, who we played earlier that clip, Dr. John McWhorter, who we have also had as a guest. Juan Williams is in that same clique. And as a former NPR correspondent, now a Fox correspondent, he was on there. He's there to provide his opinion. After Ann Romney gives her speech, which was a quite effective speech. You have to be honest. It was an effective speech. As Mitt Romney's spouse, she did what she was supposed to do. He said, in his opinion, when asked about her, he thought that she came off like a corporate wife. Now, he said that, he extrapolated more from it, gave further definition of what a corporate wife is, and then the next segment he was gone, which is something that has been levied against Fox before. That Fox, if you do not, and actually, there are other outlets on the left that do the same thing. If you do not toe the party line, off with your head. But he was there as a moderate liberal, I would suffice. Now, many liberals perceive him to be rabidly conservative. He has a conservative bent. On some issues, he's not willing to kowtow to political correctness. We know that's the reason why he was fired from NPR, because of some comments about those of the Muslim faith going on a plane. When he said honestly, he gets a bit nervous. He's being honest, nervous when he sees someone who is in full Islamic garb going on an airplane. He's a little bit reticent of that. He said that honestly without being politically correct, and he was quickly ousted from NPR. So Fox took him up. He was actually double duty shift between NPR and Fox. So eventually he ended up being in Fox. Now I hope that's not what happened, but I'm hearing that's kind of sort of what happened. Once he gave his opinion on Ann Romney, he wasn't on the panel anymore. You know, the opinion is may be considered to be a valid opinion. Now, if I could find the clip. So anyway, I'm talking about Andrew Hacker. I want to get him on the show because his book, Two Nations, Black and White, was really, really a biting analysis of race relations. This is going back to the 90s. And I never forgot about what he stated about blacks who attempt to move into predominantly white arenas or white areas. You know, whether moving in means employment or residential moving. And he said that many whites perceive blacks moving in into their arenas as a almost as a disease. And I never forgot that. So I want to get him on the show for him to go deeper into this and just where are we in context with his book some 10, 15, 20 years prior and where we are now with having an African-American in the White House that he thought, and I never forgot that statement, he thought that blacks encroaching on white arenas, that the whites perceive it as somewhat of a disease. Never forgot that. So I want to get this gentleman on just to do a review. Captain, any thoughts, your impressions on the RNC? I'm going to try to find this clip with Juan Williams for greater edification. But any thoughts on your opinion of what we were seeing during the RNC? Yeah, and Romney spoke. We know that Governor Christie spoke. He spoke quite well. He kind of gave that everyman, blue-collar-ish vibe. Arthur Davis, who was formerly a campaign leader for the Obama campaign, for the Obama administration, now many perceive him to be a turncoat for those on the right. And although he spoke quite effectively, some people perceive him to be a quote-unquote Uncle Tom, or if not an Uncle Tom, if not that, he's certainly a Benedict Arnold. What are your thoughts about what you were seeing, the vibe from yesterday?
Well, before I get into that, I'll address what you said earlier pertaining to race in this country and other parts of the world. First, what everyone has to understand, tribalism is in the DNA. tribalism is in everyone's DNA. And the powers that be, which are the bankers, they understand this. So if you notice, in every country that begins to fall apart, what do? They let in immigrants. If you notice, in one time in this country, it was not so easy to come to this country, the United States. It was a lot harder as far as immigration is concerned. You could come here, but it wasn't that easy. When the country starts going down, meaning which the theft of your money, if you look at 2001 to 2012 now, you were probably richer in 2001 than you are right now. So what happens is there's also more immigrants in the country at this given time. So what happens when things start to go wrong? The tribalism within you starts to kick in. You say the black man. Now it's the Mexican man. It's misdirection. If you go to Greece, it's the same thing. You go to France, it's the same thing. You go to London, which it's even worse. They're all over the place, mixed country. This is what the bankers do to trigger your tribalism so you do not see what's going on. And if you notice, in any country when it begins to go down, it's not because of the immigrants. It's because it triggers misdirection. In your mindset, you get emotional and you cannot see. When you have emotion, it overcomes reason. Okay, overcomes reason. So they let in all the immigrants, and then you turn around and say, oh, the Mexicans are taking the jobs, it's the Arabs, it's the this. Meanwhile, the bankers are pulling everything from you. Now, that's that. That's how that works. That's what they do. Now, next thing you have to notice and realize in this country, it would seem like the liberal agenda that they're pushing isn't really working. If you have people running around saying, well, these black people, these white people, these Mexican people, these Arab people, and then if you give your opinion, you're gone. They're trying to suppress your opinions in any way, shape, or form. You're not allowed to like anybody. You're not allowed not to like anybody. They took that right away from you. You just cannot say you do not like this person. You do not like, and you might have valid reasons. If you're a white person, you might have valid reasons for saying, I do not like these kind of people. If you're a black person, you might have valid reasons for saying you cannot like these type of people. We remember Archie Bunker, that type of show. A lot of people thought the way Archie Bunker thought. That's not allowed today in 2012 in no way, shape, or form. We cannot do that. Now, to address Miss Romney, the corporate wife, I think she did what she was supposed to do. I think that's what she was supposed to do. She did an excellent job at what she was supposed to do. She stepped out there, she did her grandstanding speech, and she did what she was supposed to do. That's it. That's how I see it. All this is fluff. This is icing on the cake. Make it look good. Everybody's playing the game. Everyone's jockeying for position. And everything here in America, regardless of whoever you put in the office, is going to get worse. But it looks good, so let's play the game. Back over to you, Sir Apple Nerd.
Yeah, there was a mentioning in Ann Romney's speech that she was trying to liken her early days with Mitt Romney as a struggling period. And she mentioned something about being, I believe, in a college setting or a dorm room, and she had to eat pasta. She had to eat pasta with Mitt Romney. Now, Mitt Romney was already the son. He was the son of George Romney, a governor. So let's not pretend. I mean, he came from a family of means. Just like Paul Ryan comes from a family of means. Either you do or you don't. There have to be some ways to try to connect with folks. And I thought that was a little bit. I mean, really. That's not connecting with people who are going through struggle or going through or who are impoverished. If that's what you're trying to do. If you're not trying to do that, then don't fake the funk. Now, I found the clip where Juan Williams describes Ann Romney as a corporate wife, and at least one or two of his fellow panelists took issue with that description, or rather they questioned him on that. I think they were saying, you might want to stay on message, I think. I'm just saying. All right, this is Juan Williams on Ann Romney. Hold on.
Speech, I thought it was extremely powerful, a little bit curious that Romney
appears at the end, but I thought he did a job as the keynote speaker for the party.
Juan,
Well, I just have a different point of view here because I thought that Chris Christie did a very good job. I thought that, you know, he spoke with a voice, and maybe because I grew up in New York, but it sounded to me like a voice that spoke to me. I didn't even feel like he was giving a speech. I thought he was talking to me personally, and it was very effective, very moving. And when he spoke about the idea of leadership across political lines and suggested concretely what he had done with teachers to improve the quality of schools, I found it compelling and convincing. And if there is a vision that Republicans can offer, I think that is the vision. Now, the problem with it, obviously, is Republicans have, in the minds of Democrats, acted as obstructionists. They have been the ones that have been blocking, according to President Obama, much of that progress. But Chris Christie, it seemed to me, was on point, and I thought he was a vigorous speaker and convincing one here tonight. Mitt Romney's wife, Ann Romney, on the other hand, looked to me like a corporate wife. And, you know, the story she told about struggles, it's hard for me to believe. I mean, she's a very rich woman, and I know that in America.
Wow, okay.
What does that mean, corporate wife?
What does it mean? It looks like a woman whose husband takes care of her, and she's been very lucky and blessed in this life. She's not speaking, I think, for the tremendous number of single women in this country or married women or separate. She's not speaking. She did not convince me that, you know what, I understand the struggles of American women in general.
Is that the same speech you heard, Brent?
No, I think that was the single most effective political speech I've ever heard given by a political wife. And I think that to the extent that she could do it in terms of rendering her husband as someone who women who may have had doubts about him could identify with and warm up to, I think she did the job as well as she possibly could.
All right. Did you catch that, Captain? It's somewhat of a mild smackdown on him that you have to define what a corporate wife is. Come on. She is a corporate wife. I mean, that's one thing. You know, Juan Williams is a very intelligent man. She is a corporate wife. And some, I know the captain wants to say something, but something else I want to mention as well. And I'm saying this. Listen, I'm not a Republican sycophant. Artur Davis. Governor Christie. Who else spoke? I believe Santorum. These gentlemen, nobody really mentioned Mitt Romney, you know, with their speeches. You are supposed to be a cheerleader for the person that got the nomination. You are supposed to be a cheerleader for him. Everyone else seemed to be making stump speeches for themselves. And the fact that the ghost of George Bush, well, more accurately, his ghost was there, not his physical body. We're not going to see George Bush at this RNC. How can someone who was almost in office for a decade, two terms, love him or hate him, if you're not going to be disingenuous, if you're not going to be disingenuous, you should have him there. The argument that's going to come from the Democrats is going to be, a lot of this is on the shoulder of the past administration. Many folks may not want to hear that, but if you're not going to have George Bush at this function, you are almost conceding to the Democratic argument. Have him there. Have him there. Own up to it. Don't be scurred, as they say, and muddle through. Muddle through. They're being very slick about it. We're supposed to believe that this just didn't happen. And I think his absence is a bit too glaring for me. I have to be honest. I have to be honest before I am partisan. Captain.
Well, the reality is honesty in this game will get you hemmed up. You'll lose your income at that level. They bring in journalists. They pay them high-end six-figure salaries or seven-figure salaries to essentially to be a cheerleader to play the game. And if you do not cheer exactly in the manner that they want, it's laid out for you. It's totally laid out for you. You will find yourself with a pink slip. That's the game that they play right now. So what you see when you turn on the TV, you're not getting true opinion. And a lot of times you're not getting accurate reporting. Everything is slanted. Everything is slanted. And if you go the other way, if you go off the script, you'll find yourself with a pig slip. It was nice. You're a great talent, Here's a handshake. Here's some money. Move on. Goodbye. That's the game that they're playing now. Now, as far as Mr. Bush, it'll probably come along a little bit later. That's the plan that I think that they have. They always get into these guys a little bit later, and they bring them on a little bit later down the line. That's pretty much how it works, you know, from my standpoint. That's just my opinion. But I am on here on the Internet, so I can give my opinion. So there you have it. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
All right, I want to take another musical break, as we always do. We always try to give you the best in urban alternative. This is a song that was submitted to my attention last week by a artist by the name of Shanice Revolution. When we get back, I want to talk more about this racial thing, but now it's more from the military perspective. Now we have a group of soldiers that had this outrageous, outlandish, conspiratorial plot to not only overthrow the government, but also to take out the POTUS, President of the United States. So this is pretty, and there's been some deaths. I think even in one of the clips I played, they mentioned that two people were killed for having uncovered the plot. So again, these folks were serious. So this animus is really coming out with just the hint of the possibility that Barack Obama could see a second term. The very thought of it has some folks rattled, and it's definitely mired in racial beliefs or racist beliefs. All right, folks, once again, this is Shanice Revolution. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove.
I and I fight the hypocrisy. Babylon no shoot without apology. So we got to take a stand. I and I tired of this talking. No silencing. Take the revolution to make a solution. I when me tell them, say this takes a revolution to make a solution. Who wants to stop me, block me? Watch how them a watch me. Red, black and green a patch me. Attire for the weak man spit fire. How long this empress die? To the wicked man retire. Hand blunt, trigger finger heavy. Remember Patrick Doris man. They don't know what they're facing. Eyes red cause we straight Mary Jane blazing. I said rust and I bow to their waving. Why then so many of us hesitating? Sean Bell, Trust, I know I say it's rough out there, Jah know we need a solution. But the elders tell me, said them, said it takes a revolution. And a one or two man, I and I as a union. Give Babylon the boot and takes a revolution to make a solution. Who me a Jah for now? Well, Malcolm X and Steve Biko. Lioness a seek yo. Marcus Mosiah. Lioness not a ria. With no weak heart warrior. How are them they ever? Babylon not feel it. And turn around, cause them know anity is rent. And then the lioness move legendary. Like Malcolm X said, by any means necessary. Who no member went to Saint had the whole of Haiti locked down. Said, tell Napoleon freedom, I come with shotgun. Hey, I said it takes a revolution. Them never see the man I come, I know, I said it takes a revolution. He move and stand that it takes a revolution. Words without words have no words. It takes a revolution to make a solution. Hear me a talk about now. Listen, we come from a great line of warriors and warrioresses. Kojo and Nani, Jamaica, Buster, Barbados, Kofi, Guyana, Beverly Jones, Trinidad, Joseph Chateau, St. Vincent, and even Yasser. There was once a man who spoke of repatriation. And now to I and I, that is a great plan. But talking like that got Babylon vexed. And that's the real reason they killed Malcolm X. I said it takes a revolution. They said too much power for that black man. I said it takes a revolution. I know we never take this seat down for any man. I said it takes a revolution. They move and stand that it takes a revolution to make a solution. Listen, one more thing. The youth them dying at a rate that is so staggering. And all them want them sing about is how them gathering. How much shattering and how much dream them shattering. Brains it's a shattering. Mama dream shattering. Up your mighty race. Up your mighty race. How much more shall we face? How much more shall we face? Wanna open up your eyes. Sight with them in disguise. So when them try to rise, kill cramp and paralyze. So it takes a revolution. Oh, lion for up in the air. You know that it takes a revolution. Yes, I want to fist in the air. You know it takes a revolution. The empress now go stop singing till she know that we get a revolution. To make a solution. Hey, here.
It takes a revolution to make a solution.
4 guys at Fort Stewart are part of a militia. They are, of course, anti-government, right-wing, and they're so right-wing and anti-government that they're anarchists. Now, some of the plans that they had were to blow up a dam and poison an apple orchard. What a weird group of terrorists. And then, of course, assassinate the president. Now, I want you to understand that these guys are not playing. They murdered 2 people. Now, we know that because one of them just turned state's evidence, and he is a 26-year-old soldier, Michael Burnett, and he wound up pleading guilty to manslaughter, illegal gang activity, and other charges. The other 3 are facing malice murder, felony murder, criminal gang activity, aggravated assault, and using a firearm while committing a felony. They took one of their members of their group that was with them that had left the army that they thought might betray them. They called him a loose end, Michael Rourke. They took him out to the woods saying, oh, we're just going to do some practice shooting, ha-ha. And, by the way, they also took out his girlfriend, Tiffany York. As they're getting out of the car, they shoot Tiffany York in the head. And then they take Michael Rourke out, make him get down on his knees, and shoot him twice in the head. So not only did they murder these 2 people, but they had bought $87,000 worth of weapons, stored it. They also had bought a tract of land in Washington State to do more militia exercises to get ready for their insane terrorist plots. And the reason that they had that money is their leader of the group wound up collecting $500,000 on a life insurance from his pregnant wife who died last year under what prosecutors are calling suspicious circumstances. So you get a sense of how insane and ridiculous and dangerous these guys are. Now, their group was called FEAR, Forever Enduring, Always Ready. They had similar tattoos, etc., hence the gang activity label. But here's what I don't understand, what I've told you several times already, what it seems clear on the evidence, but it's not mentioned in the media at all, and by the government at all. Why are these guys not called terrorists? I mean, do you get a bigger terrorist activity than trying to overthrow our government, bomb a dam, poison the citizens, and kill the president? If Iran had sent 4 people into the country to do this same exact plot, we'd already be in Tehran. We'd have landed already. We'd have bombed, invaded, and landed in Tehran already. Why are these guys not terrorists? Why? Because it's just because they're white? Just because they're a militia? Just because they're right-wing? I don't understand how you couldn't... It is inconceivable that you would call them anything but terrorists. I mean, if this isn't terrorism, what the hell is? It's unbelievable. So remember that the right-wing had gone crazy when the Department of Homeland Security had put out a report saying, hey, you know, we need to be a little bit careful about guys who were part of the military or currently part of the military that are being radicalized by anti-government forces. And Fox News and Russia was, how dare you? How dare you say that about our right wing and our military? And what did the Department of Homeland Security and the Obama administration do? What they always do. They got scared, they panicked, and they took the number of people investigating those groups in this country down from 6 to 1 guy. Okay? Meanwhile, they have 25 guys tracking possible Muslim terrorists in the country. And in almost every year since 1995, with the exception of 1 or 2 years, obviously 9/11 being a huge exception, but outside of that, right-wing extremists have done more terrorist attacks than Muslim extremists here in the United States. But because of political pressure, we don't ever investigate those guys as much. Now, thank God, in this case, the prosecutors did a brilliant job. They found out the evidence. They turned one of the guys against them, and they got these guys and got them off the street before they did their plots. Forget against the president. I mean, that would have been much, much harder, obviously. But whether it was poisoning their local community or blowing up dams or just killing more innocent people, they got them off the street. Thank God for that. But everybody needs to call these guys what they clearly are, which is terrorists.
All right, folks. That was Cenk Ungar. I think I'm pronouncing his name correctly. Cenk Ungar from the Young Turks. I believe he's on the Current TV. I believe he is with Current TV. And, of course, he's quite ubiquitous on the Internet. You can definitely check him out on YouTube. He's been around for a couple of years. And he is, you know, he's rabidly liberal. It's okay. That's okay. I'm not going to browbeat someone. You know, he's rabidly liberal. I have more of a conservative bent, but I'm pretty sure someone's going to call me a rhino, a Republican in name only. I'm probably on the scale of things, just like some folks, quote unquote, aren't black enough, whatever that means, whatever that means. Some folks aren't conservative enough. He's definitely on the liberal side of things. And as I mentioned before, when someone speaks in a truthful manner, irrespective of what side of the political aisle they're on, I have to take heed. I have to take heed. I can't just pretend like something doesn't exist when it does exist. When all the points are lined up and it makes sense, it makes sense. And what he said in that monologue was right on point. For whatever reason, these young men aren't being labeled terrorists, but if they were of Middle Eastern origin and having done this crime or crimes, having done these crimes, allegedly, they would be called terrorists without a second thought. Now all of a sudden, we're hesitant to give them an actual title. That's problematic for me. But what's also problematic for me, and which I mentioned, and what I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, was hopefully we'll get Professor Andrew Hacker on the show to discuss his book, Two Nations, Black and White. I'd like to read – he has a new book as well, so we have to be respectful. And that book's actually a good book. But this earlier work of his, Two Nations, Black and White, I would implore our listenership to get it. It's a fascinating read. And it really talks about the core of racial animus, at least modern-day racial animus, where it comes from, why it is. I think the actual word – I might use the word disease. The actual word he used was infestation. When folks of color encroach, whether it's in housing or in professional pursuits, some whites, many whites – I will not say all, but some or many – I want to quantify my words correctly. They perceive people of color as a sort of infestation. And I never forgot how he phrased it because it became very clear to me. But I'd like to get this professor's perceptions now because I'm seeing this start to come back more. It's becoming more in vogue because of President Barack Obama's presidency. But now we're led to believe that Governor Romney has a pretty decent shot at going toward the highest office in the land. So if that's the case, if we're supposed to really get all fired up, the fire in the belly, we're getting all fired up based on these proclamations, these protestations that we're seeing at the convention, then where's all this hate coming from? Peanuts are being thrown. We have weird paintings from overseas. And as I said, I don't know how to feel about that. Cause I think I've been checkmated. I've been checkmated. I don't know how angry I can be at this nude photo of the First Lady when there's a nude photo of Diana by the same artist and a nude photo of Queen Elizabeth. I don't know. But beyond that, there's a whole litany of people, especially for those who come from the right side. Although during the campaign, there are quite a few folks on the left, Geraldine Ferraro and others, that were saying some nasty things about Barack Obama. Even the first, quote unquote, the first black president and his wife said some pretty nasty things that I thought could have easily been racially charged, levied against then Senator Obama and his wife. You remember the fist bump, the infamous fist bump. But anyone that knew sports, the fist bump was not anything that was new. I guess cross racially, it was perceived to be something new or odd. But who doesn't know about the fist bump? Was that such a black thing? Oh, Captain, I want to ask you, was that even such a black thing, really? I thought that was pretty universal, or someone understood the terrorist fist bump, which some, I think Fox even likened that. I mean, that's pure hyperbole. But isn't a fist bump somewhat of a thing that dates back to sporting events, Captain?
Well, it dates back to the Olympics, if you remember. With the athletes holding their fist up in the air, and you know, it goes back really to what you know the black athletes holding their fist up in the air, and they would go ahead and do you know other things with their fists. So it's something supposed
well, that
to bind people also.
Well, the fist that was
the black power,
power black power
yeah,
fist,
black
but
power.
The fist bump.
But also the
fist
bump
was like I thought the fist bump was
people. It's supposed to bind people of a certain culture or organization. That's what it's supposed to do.
Well, I thought the fist bump was more of a we are in this together acknowledgement.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. That's
you know,
exactly
they've
what it
done
is.
That in I've seen that in corporate meetings. If
yes.
someone does something where you show that you're for the team, your supervisor, your manager, the CEO might give you a fist bump. I don't
yeah.
know why all of a sudden it was some foreign thing that the Obamas had. I thought that was pretty weird. But the reason why I mention it overall is because now there seems to be this heightened sense of dread, of this ominous thing that the Republicans are painting about the Obamas. I mean, listen, some of it is about brinkmanship, political pandering, political brinkmanship. It is politics now. It is politics. But when they start mixing in some of the racial elements in this, it gets me a bit queasy. It turns me off. Stick to the politics. Stick to the policy. Not having President Bush there at the convention when he served for two terms, you know, that's a problem. That's a problem. So, and now with this very internal thing, the acronym FEAR, Forever Enduring Always Ready, these young soldiers killing one of their own and his girlfriend just to keep this plot quiet. And they bought $87,000 worth of weaponry and ammunition. That's another thing too. We're in the shadow of what happened in Aurora, Colorado. Why aren't any headlights, any flashes, any alarms going off when someone locally, someone you know who's not an individual, or if it's not a gun shop? And even then, you might have to raise your eyebrow. But private citizens buying $87,000 worth of – I mean, who would buy that? The first thing that would come to my mind would be some terrorist operation, some gang operation, perhaps some militia operation. But now we're talking about – well, and then maybe because of the fact that they were U.S. soldiers. Maybe that had something to do with it also. Maybe that – you know, they'll go deeper into that. Do you think that might have been a possibility also, Captain, the fact that – you know, if I mean, listen, I don't know how sophisticated some of these things are when it comes down to following orders, following the gun orders, following the money. But if someone has a military status, maybe no one's really looking that hard when someone buys. But I would still think, regardless of who you are or what your station in life is, you buy that much money, you spend that much money in artillery. That's problematic. But and then to threaten to assassinate the president, all these things going on. I know this is a dumb question. I understand he's a black gentleman, but is it that bad? Another 4 years, it's going to really put us on the brink? The hysteria over the possibility of another 4 years from President Obama causing madness, Captain. It's another type of black plague. Darkness is spreading. I don't know. Any further thoughts? We got about 5 minutes remaining before we close shop. Any more thoughts on what the hell we're seeing here?
Well, it's real funny that they usher in Obama as the Pharaoh. Keep in mind, the Egyptian civilization lasted 5,000 years, so that's very big. They usher him in as pretty much the god Pharaoh, and then, because we know a god had spell power on the masses of people, and it seemed like when he was getting ushered in, the people were spellbound. It seems that the spell has worn off. Now, some people would say, now we're talking religious fervor, that Obama was the man to overcome the ox demons. Ox demons are supposed to be racial demons. It seems like that spell has worn off, and now they're seeing this man in the White House as a black man. America is turning into the real America right now. That's what it seems like is happening. That's what seems. The future will tell all. Time will tell. But it's very interesting to note. Just remember, we ushered in this man as the Pharaoh, the God. Everybody was, yes, sir, change. You know, and you know God's part water and everything else. The change didn't come fast enough, I guess, for America. Now they're starting to change. So let's just see what the future brings with this. It's going to be very interesting. Very interesting. Does the president have to watch his back at every angle? I think maybe he does, because he's supposed to be the commander in chief over the military. You have military personnel bearing arms against the president? Whoa, that's serious business. Serious business. Maybe they're absolutely right for trying to keep it hush-hush and not call them terrorists. Because people might go out in the street and say, listen, we have to go through the military and see exactly your mindset. You know, can't have that. He's the commander-in-chief. You have to listen. That's what the president does. The president definitely has that power. Send the military here, bring them home, send them out. The president has that. Now you have these individuals in your ranks. Yeah, you know, it's real serious stuff there, Sir Afro Nerd. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, it's problematic, Captain, definitely. Well, folks, it's been an absolute pleasure. We've got about 2 minutes remaining. Stay tuned for our double duty, double mint gum, double matinee show coming up this Sunday, where we have the ever popular Daryl B. I'm sure he'll be up to his shenanigans coming up, talking about all things pulp and pop and comic book and fantasy. A lot to talk about, as well as, of course, Afternoon Radio, the Week in Review show. So without further ado, I did want to talk about Morris Brown. Maybe I'll sneak that in. Morris Brown, the legendary HBCU, historically black college, has been having problems for about a decade now. And we're talking about foreclosure appears imminent. And I hate to see a school, an institution that was actually started by slaves, which is unique unto itself, by former slaves. A truly black institution, not really with the assistance of benevolent whites. Now it's going under, and I hope that we do not see part of the AU Center, Atlanta University Center, with Spelman and Morehouse I'd hate to see this school lose out. So I don't know, folks. It's not one thing, it's another. All right. See you on Sunday. This is Time Leak. Time Leak by Union featuring Talib Kweli. We'll be back on Sunday. Thanks again.
Come on. Okay. Okay. Let's go. Check it out. Yo, I got experience. How many books you truly read? Oh, the horror like a gloomy set. Zombies moving slower than the surf that be oozing out the movie Dead. I ain't a perfect man. I'm trying to do what Umi says. I got a wife and I try to protect her. Yeah, because the broken heart is the side effect of the lie detector. She like a blind specter. I try to check her sometimes. It's effective like making a lie and blind effective. I rhyme religiously. I live vigorously. Black man hate the nigger in me. You did to me, I'll be the bigger and see. What? Literally and figuratively. Spit on you and spit to the beat. Word, it's so complete. It's so spiritual. I know God personally. My flow's a miracle. I'm with you. Praise the Lord and raise the sword. I turn the words to flesh. This is the resurrection you was praying for. Writer's conscience, no, the writer's bomb shit, this is the writer's conflict. You're writing nonsense, rhymes to the writer's complex, yet it's still so simple for you to prosper. It's like black hair, yeah, that's why they always pick it. It's like cashmere, you love the way it's fitting. We share the same sentiments, but I say it different. Word. That's why they pay for the play, I'm on my way to kick it. Wait until the weight is lifted, but that'll never happen. Until the bucket gets kicked, I'll be forever rapping. Still niggas forever napping. It's time to wake them up. Treat them like weed on your CD and I break them up. Play the cut like a DJ. I sign your CD, let you flip the bitch up on eBay. Get paid, just be sure you get my next release. Word. So when I put the chicken in the pot, each one of my kids can get an extra piece. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Moving on.